Science, technology, society, our lives, philosophy, and religion. This is Spark Dialogue Podcast, where it all comes together. I'm Elizabeth Fernandez. Antarctica is a continent that is shrouded with a lot of mystery. At the bottom of the world, it doesn't get a whole lot of attention. Yet some people dream their entire lives of going there. Today we're talking to Dr. Shasta Marrero, who fulfilled her lifetime dream of visiting this strange continent, not as a tourist, but as a scientist. The thing is, Antarctica is a great place to do science, especially climate science, since the condition of Antarctica's ice sheet is a prime way to quantify how the global climate is changing. Dr. Marrero visited Antarctica to get an idea of what the ice sheet was like in the past, when the Earth was going through a warm period called the interglacial period. And by looking at the past, scientists like Dr. Marrero can predict what will happen if the Earth continues to warm, and even get an idea of how much we can expect the ice sheet to melt if the Earth continues to get warmer. So what was it like to travel to the bottom of the world?
Visiting Antarctica was, for me, an absolute dream come true. It is something I've been wanting to do ever since I was a little kid. I've always wanted to travel down, and not just as a tourist. I don't want to be on a cruise ship and going to see it. I wanted to do research in Antarctica. It's such a unique place to be, and it was one of the most amazing things I've ever done in my life.
And so how was the actual trip there?
Getting to Antarctica takes a long time, no matter how you go. For the British Antarctic Survey, which is who we went with, we went from Edinburgh, Scotland. We took a train to London. We flew from London to Madrid, then Madrid to Santiago. We flew from Santiago to Punta Arenas, which is down in the very southern tip of Chile. And then we spent the night there. And in the morning, we got up and went to the airport, where it's quite a unique experience to kind of walk in, and it's the gateway to the Antarctic. You can actually see flights that say Antarctica as the destination. So we got on a plane, and we flew via the Falkland Islands. So we flew from Punta Arenas to the Falkland Islands, picked up some equipment they needed down in Antarctica, and then flew all the way down to Rothera, which is on the peninsula, the Antarctic Peninsula. And then after that, it was going from the base to get out into the field. And you have to wait for a weather window for all the airplanes. And then you have to have all your equipment packed and ready to go. And it really is, they've got a motto down there. It's hurry up and wait. Because you get everything packed up and you have to rush because you think you're going to have a weather window. And then you sit around and wait until everything actually opens up. So it might be 3 days or a week or even 2 weeks until the weather is nice enough to fly into where you're going. But once you finally get up in the air, it's absolutely amazing. You can see everywhere. The planes have the most amazing pilots. And the other cool part was getting to watch the planes landing on skis on snow in the middle of nowhere. Surprisingly enough, less bumpy than a lot of commercial airlines that I've ever been on.
You visited Antarctica in Antarctica's summer. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. That's the opposite to the Northern Hemisphere. So we were down there. We left January 2nd to head down to Antarctica. And then we headed back, I want to say it was like February 9th.
So I suppose since you went in the summer, the weather was nice and warm and balmy, right?
I wish I could say that we were wearing shorts and t-shirts, but no, actually it was a little bit chilly. The temperatures that we generally had ranged from, let's see, it was about -8 at the warmest degrees Celsius down to about -25 out in the field.
So I know that during part of the time you're visiting Antarctica, you're actually camping. So in camping in these types of cold weather, did that lead to any interesting or unexpected consequences for you?
It was certainly interesting for me because I've done a lot of field work, but a lot of it's been in deserts. So this was the complete opposite end of most of the work that I've done before. And it was interesting to have to, for example, go out and dig up a whole bunch of snow and melt it for your own water, although it was delicious. I wouldn't say the food was fantastic because we were eating a lot of freeze-dried meals. They last forever down there, though, because it's so cold. And I don't know, it was interesting, and I'd say the camping was some of the most comfortable camping I've ever done. This wasn't sleeping on a little air mattress on a bumpy ground. This was sleeping on a lamb's skin, actual lamb's hide, with all the wool and everything, on top of a huge ice sheet, which is kind of comfy. It was a fantastic camping experience. So I had a really great time, and they did a really good job of taking care of us out there.
So as I understand it, in Antarctica, there are huge mountain ranges, but we're only seeing a small fraction of them because most of these mountain ranges are buried underneath the ice.
Most of Antarctica is covered in ice and snow, with less than 2% bare rocks exposed. And these bare rocks are just the tippy tops of an entire mountain range that's covered below. Antarctica has a lot of rich, we call it the bed. So it's just what we can see through the ice, because we're really still learning about what's hidden down there. We know even recently that we've been discovering new mountain ranges that we didn't even know existed. So we're working at the tip tops of these rocks. We call those nunataks, where these mountains stick out of the ice sheet. And it's really interesting to kind of glimpse the world that you know it has to be hidden down there, using all sorts of cool tools like geophysics. We use geophysics to kind of image underneath the ice. It turns out that there's actually, on top of these entire mountain ranges, we have up to 3 kilometers of ice on top of the full mountains. So in East Antarctica, you have a lot of ice to look through. So we're still not able to look to the very bottom of some of those areas.
So basically, there's more ice than there is mountain in some of these regions.
Definitely. And in West Antarctica, the difference here is East Antarctica has a very stable, at the moment anyway, ice sheet. It seems much more stable. We're most worried about West Antarctica. We're pretty sure that West Antarctica will respond faster to any climate change that happens going forward. And that's we're seeing some of the most intense climate change in the world is actually happening along the Antarctic Peninsula in West Antarctica.
Why is West Antarctica so sensitive to climate change?
There's a couple of reasons. One of them has to do with the way the ocean currents move energy, warm water and things around the continent. But the other is the interaction with the ocean. So East Antarctica is the ice sheet is on top of these giant mountain ranges, and it's held up mostly by land mass. In West Antarctica, you have ice shelves, and these ice shelves actually kind of buttress the glaciers. So as the ice sheet is moving from land out over the ocean, it forms these shelves, and those shelves kind of keep the ice from moving really quickly because it has to push against the mass of ice there. But when these ice shelves disappear, which we've had happen in some of the ice shelves up on the peninsula, the ice shelf disappears, and then all of a sudden the glaciers speed up because they want to replace that. They're just kind of flowing downhill very fast because there's nothing there to stop them anymore. And so then you can have a lot more ice leaving the continent just because of these interactions with the ocean. So West Antarctica, if you look at a map of it once it's had all of the ice stripped off of it, it's actually a series of islands. A lot of it's below sea level. And especially even in the area where we were working, if you got rid of all of the ice in West Antarctica, you're looking at little dotted islands instead of a coherent continent, which is what you have underneath East Antarctica.
So basically, the islands have a harder time supporting the ice than the main continent does.
Exactly.
And so when the ice starts disappearing, it's just a runaway process.
Yes, it definitely feeds back on itself.
So could you tell us a little bit about the geography of the area you visited?
So most of Antarctica is covered with ice and snow. So there's actually less than 2% of it that's exposed, that's bare rock. And being a geologist, I need to go where the rocks are. So we don't have too much to choose from. Where we were based, we were south of Rothera. So Rothera is the UK base. It's the British Antarctic Survey base that's located on the peninsula. But our field work was quite a bit further south, kind of where there's a big ice sheet to the east of the peninsula, and we were just to the south of that big ice sheet in the Ellsworth Mountains.
So, what kind of geological features were you looking for?
So we were trying to figure out what the ice sheet's been doing over the past 1 million years, Did it rise or fall? How fast did it fall? And we use rocks to figure out this history. So we need to go where we have nunataks, which are the mountains that are sticking up above the ice sheet, in order to collect these samples. So I do what's called exposure age dating, and this is basically using chemistry to figure out how long a rock has been exposed to the surface. So this is different from what you might hear of, which is the rock formation age. So how long ago did the rock form? We're not looking at that. We're looking at how long it's been exposed, so not covered by other rocks or ice. So when the glacier or ice sheet retreats, melts back, goes to a lower elevation, these rocks are exposed to the surface and starts the clock for what we're doing, which is exposure age dating. So we went to an area where the ice sheet has fluctuated in the past and tried to figure out what the West Antarctic ice sheet has been doing.
So basically what you're saying is that as the temperature of the Earth rises and falls, the ice sheet will also rise and fall, and the amount of rocks that are exposed will let you know a little bit about what the climate of the Earth is doing.
Exactly. The exact timing of when the ice sheet retreated or thinned is recorded in these rocks, in the exposure ages that we're calculating from those. So we can figure out how fast, and that can tell us about the climate of the past. And because we're looking at the West Antarctic ice sheet melting, it can tell us about what sea level was doing at the time as well.
Okay, so how exactly do you do that? What do you look for in the rocks?
My exposure age dating is called cosmogenic nuclide exposure age dating. So, as these rocks sit out at the surface, exposed to everything that's coming in, so cosmic rays are bombarding us, the astronauts up at the International Space Station, all of us on Earth, we're being bombarded constantly by cosmic rays. And these cosmic rays interact in the rock to create new nuclides, so new particles that we can measure in the rock. And the longer it sits at the surface, the more stuff accumulates, and we can dissolve the rock away and actually pull that out and measure it. So we can figure out how long the rock has been sitting at the surface using that. It's similar to, you might think of other chronometers, things we use to measure things that have happened in the past, like radiocarbon. Same kind of isotope that we're looking at.
So the cosmic rays act as sort of like a timekeeping device within the rock.
Exactly. We still had an ice sheet, even when it was really, really warm in the past, warmer than it is right now. We didn't melt everything away. We definitely got rid of a lot of ice in the area, but we've essentially said that West Antarctica only contributed 3 meters to sea level rise.
So 3 meters is still seems like a lot as far as rising sea levels.
It definitely is. So that's something that we're saying that over the next period of time, going back, the ice sheet's going to keep melting. We know the ice sheet's going to keep melting as we get warmer and warmer in the climate. And we're trying to figure out what's a reasonable amount that West Antarctica might contribute in the future. And it looks like 3 meters is a pretty reasonable number until we go past that point, and lose even more ice.
A lot of people are probably curious. How does looking at what happened in Antarctica in the past tell us about what's going to happen to our planet in the future?
So we don't know for sure what's going to happen in the future, and we're using a lot of different models to look at sea level rise and how the ice sheet will melt. And these models are calibrated on real data. We're using real data from the past to kind of predict where it might go in the future. And we're not sure how much West Antarctica might contribute. We know that there's enough ice there that if you melted it all, it's going to give us between 3 and 5 meters of sea level rise in the future. And that is a really significant amount, and we need to know how fast that's going to happen and exactly what's going to happen when the ice sheet melts. We're really not sure what the response of sea level would be if it were to all melt away. And this gives us kind of a point from the past when we know where sea level was and we know where the ice sheet was in West Antarctica that we can kind of calibrate from the past and apply that going forward in the future and give us a better idea, a better picture of what the future might look like.
So many people probably won't ever get a chance to visit Antarctica. Through your eyes, what do you think is the most impressive portion of your trip there?
Well, Penguins and seals and orca aside, because it was an amazing wildlife, the most impressive part of visiting Antarctica for me was the scale. It's a huge place, and it just makes you feel absolutely tiny. We are just one itty bitty piece of this gigantic world, and that to me was the biggest unexpected thing that I learned down there.
It's a very impressive thing to learn, I think.
It changed how I see everything, and it gives me a better perspective on what I'm doing for the rest of my science now.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love talking about all the work we did down in Antarctica, and yeah, thanks for having me on.
That was Dr. Shasta Marrero talking about visiting Antarctica as a scientist. This is Elizabeth Fernandez for Spark Dialogue Podcasts. If you like us, don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.